Have you ever walked barefoot or in stocking feet across the floor and then you stepped on a small object, something like perhaps a toy or a Lego building block? As the sermon indicated today, you know, when you get online and people are responding to an article, and after the first couple of comments, it gets into be name calling and throwing things at other people. And I was reading a news article and I saw the comments underneath. And one guy, in an effort to insult somebody else, said, "I hope you step on a Lego." Now, I thought, well, you know, that's really an uncomfortable thought. You know, perhaps we've all done something. But one thing is for sure, is when we step on that Lego or step on something, our forward motion is stopped. They say your little toes are there to provide a guidance system for you at night in the dark. As a child, my brothers and I were always admonished to pick up the toys that we had left out so somebody didn't trip over them. And this was especially true at Grandma's house. She had two boxes of toys, one of Tinker Toys and the other one were Lincoln Logs. And they had all the stuff that went with them, little boxes. We knew where they went in the closet. So as the kids, when you went to Grandma's house, it was called Grandma's house for some reason, because Grandma made sure of that. Grandpa was there to back her up. But before we left, everything had to be picked up and put away. This last week, as I'd mentioned earlier, I had attended my aunt's funeral in Oklahoma, and my cousins and I were reminiscing about visiting Grandpa and Grandma's house. And in my cousin's words, and I will quote, "Whenever Grandma stomped her foot, you'd best do what you were supposed to do for fear of what would come next." Now, we never really knew what would come next because we were always hastening to pick up whatever it was we had to pick up, and nothing was left scattered around the house. Well, what were Grandpa and Grandma so worried about? Well, this was many, many years ago. But in an article published on a website called ComfortKeepers.com, May 12, 2016, there was an article entitled "Seniors and Falls, Statistics and Prevention." And in this article, it explains that about one-third of the senior population of over 65 falls each year. But since so many incidents go unreported by seniors and other family members, the estimate is probably low. About 9,500 deaths of older Americans occur each year are associated with a fall. And falls from are a leading cause of death and injury among people that are over 65. And the risk of falling increases as we get old. At 80 years of age, over half of seniors have a fall annually. Well, that's pretty significant statistics. The article goes on to say that 87% of fractures in the elderly are due to falls. Two-thirds will do so again in 6 months. And when an older person falls, their hospital stays are almost twice as long as those of older patients who are admitted for other reasons. Among people aged 65 to 69, one of every 200 falls results in a hip fracture. And the number increases to one out of every 10 for those who are 85 and older. One-fourth of seniors who fracture a hip from a fall die within 6 months of the injury. So there's a real concern about a fall. Many are unable to get up on their own, and then the period of time that they're immobile, just lying there, often affects their outcomes. Muscle cell breakdown occurs within 30 to 60 minutes of compression due to falling. Dehydration, hypothermia, and pneumonia and other complications end result. Well, today my title for today's Bible study is Identifying Stumbling Blocks. Identifying Stumbling Blocks. I really want to briefly introduce 4 points. The stumbling blocks that we put in front of ourselves is the first point. You know, each year I have the opportunity to counsel high school students who aren't performing as well as they should. Perhaps they aren't turning in their assignments on time, or maybe they're not turning in their assignments at all. Perhaps they're getting low test scores because they didn't do the readings or daily work to get a good grade. Perhaps there's other problems at the student's home, and the student brings then those problems to school. And then the student lashes out with a behavior issue. Well, when I talk to these students privately, and I ask, what do you think you could do to have a better result in your life? And the answer is very widely, but generally speaking, When I respond, I tell them pretty much the same thing. I advise this, almost all the students that I talk to, that they need to learn to become their own best friend. And so they need to stop putting a stumbling block in front of themselves so they don't keep falling, they don't keep failing. And of course, the stumbling blocks are many for all people of all ages, but in students, which is often what I work with, the stumbling blocks, staying up late, not getting up early, not eating breakfast, you know, the whole long list of things. With some, it's not bathing regularly. And so they have social, antisocial behavior with others and so forth. The challenge that we have before us as church members is to recognize the stumbling blocks that we put in front of ourselves. Because we too are students, only we're students of the Most High God, and not students in a school, a high school somewhere. Jesus Christ in Matthew 16:23 pointed out, was quick to point out a stumbling block in Matthew 16:23. He, meaning Christ, said, turned and said to Peter, "Get behind me, Satan. You are a stumbling block to me, for you're not setting your mind on God's interests, but man's." Now, Peter said the words, but Satan inspired a stumbling block, and Christ recognized it. He said right there, "Well, nope, not going to have that. Get behind me. Don't be a stumbling block for me." Well, we often don't recognize what a stumbling blocks are, many times because we're distracted or we're enticed by something that's on the other side of it. I was only going to do thus and such, and then something bad happened, the stumbling occurred. If we take a look at this story, the explanation in Proverbs, the end of Proverbs 6 goes into Proverbs 7, talks about a young man being enticed by a woman of ill repute. And in Proverbs 7:22, he's being drawn into sin. And in Proverbs 7:22, it says, "Immediately he went in after her as an ox goes to slaughter or as a fool to the correction of the stocks." Just as the ox is unaware that it's about to be slaughtered, so are many people unaware that the consequences of sin are going to end up badly for them. Commonly, people think that the consequences happen to other people. If it doesn't happen to me, it's somebody else that's going to have that issue. And then when it's too late, then people realize that perhaps they should have chosen a better path. What we do in school is say, perhaps you should make better choices. But that's true for all of us at all age. An example of this, and I heard this one on the radio this week while driving, there's now a strong correlation between gum disease and Alzheimer's. Memory loss or functionality as people age. Well, my recently deceased aunt was a dental hygienist. What she did was clean people's teeth for many years. And my cousins recounted after the funeral that every evening their mom would sing to them, "It's time for brushy, brushy, brushy," making a habit for them. Now, and so they were, you know, fondly recalling that their mother was instilling these little habits in them, yet unknowing that how many years later that would have be fulfilling, that they would be able to avoid things that, such as Alzheimer's or other things associated with gum disease. So we often make little decisions in life we don't really connect the consequences that come much later. Well, what kind of stumbling blocks do we put in front of ourselves? And the list is really long and it's varied in difference from one person to another. What may be a problem for one person may be easy for another person to overcome. You say, well, what's the problem with that? And it's always easier to point out someone else's weaknesses than it is to realistically discover and work on our own. I mean, as my brother says, that's why we get married, so we have someone to point out our weaknesses. For example, some people are drawn to chocolate. That's their weakness. Other people can't help but criticize others. After all, aren't we just supposed to be honest with them? So we give them a full blast with both barrels, because that's the least we could do is to be honest with them. Without looking. So you have these varying weaknesses. Some people take stuff from other people. They don't respect other people's property. Some people vandalize stuff from other people. It was just a couple of weeks ago, we had senior prank day at school, which is, of course, unofficial, but some seniors took chalk and they drew in their parking spaces assigned, and they each drew caricatures, which was all fine and nice. except one person didn't use chalk, used paint. And then they didn't confine it to just the parking spaces in the parking lot. Drew some, and wrote some script, not evil or bad script, but wrote it in the front entry to the brand new $25 million school. And they were not being their friend, their own friend, or the school's friend on the morning that that occurred. And there was an announcement: all seniors report to the commons immediately. It was the superintendent. The superintendent came to the school that morning, and she went on to explain to the seniors, this is told secondhand to me, that not only was she unhappy that the front of the school on the sidewalk was decorated, but whoever did it didn't spell the words correctly. And further, she was bringing over a person who was a potential donor for a $2 million donation to improve our auditorium. This is the most livid that anybody has ever seen the superintendent for having lost that opportunity for people. People, you know, they go their own way. They don't see their own shortcomings. So they vandalize other people's stuff and think nothing of it. Some people have a weakness. They spend money on Hollywood movies that graphically display lots of different sinful activities. And the list would go on and on. Well, at this time of year, we can now reduce it to the number of weeks before Passover. We are in a position where we have to examine ourselves so that we are not our own, our worst enemy, so that we're not placing stumbling blocks in front of ourselves. And the verse that we commonly refer to is written by Paul to the Corinthian church in 2 Corinthians 13:5. And here we read, "Examine yourselves as to whether you are in the faith. Test yourselves." And then there's a period there. Well, I don't know if the punctuation was there originally, but it says, "Examine as to whether you're in the faith." Well, we all think we're in the faith, right? We all expect that we are. And Paul is writing to people who go to church and they think that they're in the faith. And he said, test to see, examine to see if you really are. In other words, dig really deep. Are you doing are you living the way you say you believe? And then he goes on in 2 Corinthians 13:5, "Do you not know yourselves that Jesus Christ is in you?" Well, there's this, he's saying you can't separate yourself from the expectation that you have to do what Christ expects of you. So, and then ends up by saying, unless indeed you are disqualified. So people may not even recognize it, that what they're doing will be a disqualification for them. Well, one way to overcome weaknesses is to, as the Bible describes as sin, is to have a plan and then to carry out the plan. Now, most people don't have a plan. I mean, about most everything. It's just the nature of human beings. We do things the way we've always done them. In 1957, a study was done of the graduates of Yale University. And they asked every graduate at Yale University, what if you have goals in life? And you know what? Every Yale University graduate had a goal. And then they asked them, are your goals written down? And only 3% of them had their goals written down. 97% didn't, but they had goals, every one of them. The study went for 25 years, and in 25 years, they again found every one of those Yale graduates 25 years later, and they compared. The only thing you could objectively compare is, what do you own? What are your assets? What's your dollars? How many dollars have you accumulated in life? Because that's one way of measuring whether they have reached those goals. And when I present this to students, I ask them, I'll take three answers. How much of the assets did the 3% have as compared to the 97%? And the answers can vary widely, but usually it's pretty close to the 3%. What they're shocked to find out is that the 3% of those who have goals that are written down own 97% of the assets. And the 97% that have goals, but they didn't write them down, have only 3% of the assets. So the next question is, do we have a plan? Do we have our goals? Are our goals written down? In other words, are they within us? Just as the Apostle Paul wrote to the Corinthians, is Christ in you? Is it so deep in you? It's like written on your heart and written on your mind what your goals are. So Do we have a plan then to remove the obstacles that we place in front of ourselves? Because we all do it. Now, one plan that I use to root out sin or the thought of sin in my own life is to ask God to help replace any fleeting thought of sin with something good, something righteous. So if something floats in, as it does for everyone, I ask God, give me the strength now to do something good, to think something right and proper. So really, the first point is becoming aware of the stumbling blocks that we place in front of ourselves. The second point is becoming aware of the stumbling blocks that others put in front of us, meaning individually. As I was traveling on the freeway home to Arkansas last Thursday evening, there was a car on the freeway. It was in the fast lane, and it swung across two lanes into the turn lane or the exit ramp, and it was a sudden accident or a sudden action that could have caused an accident, could have piled up six or more vehicles, could have been a terrible wreck with multiple lives lost. Now, fortunately, it managed to clear everybody, and the person made the exit. Well, we can't control the bad decisions of others, but we can be prepared by doing the best we can ourselves. When I was on the highway, I was careful not to tailgate. I wasn't going to exceed the speed limit, and I wasn't driving tired or impaired. But to become aware, we must be prepared at all times, lest someone else catches us unawares. And that's what happens in life. Much of what happens to us is because we're unaware of what happens, what other people are going to make a decision. I think it's safe and pretty fair to presume that most of us have had a challenge along the way regarding keeping the Sabbath. And sometimes that obstacle is deliberate. I've had meetings scheduled years ago, and the person that called for the meeting put the meeting schedule on Saturday, knowing full well I couldn't be there. So I wouldn't be able to have any input into the decisions that would come with that. And it was a deliberate. It was a deliberate action. Sometimes it happens by accident when somebody didn't know. Last spring, my schoolroom and office was moved to a new location, and they scheduled it for a Saturday. Now, the person that did the scheduling of it, didn't pay any attention. I'm just one person out of many. And as a result, a number of my personal pieces of furniture, bookshelves and bookcases and cabinets and such, were deemed worthless and thrown away. Well, they weren't worthless to me, but I couldn't be there on the Saturday that they moved them. I wasn't there to tell the organizers, hey, that's my stuff. You can't throw that away. I paid good money for that. But it didn't match what they were wanting to do. So it was inadvertent for them. It wasn't personal, it wasn't done deliberately to spite me, but the consequences when it happens to us then can also be difficult. Yet some people do things deliberately to hurt others, and God has a way of dealing with others who wish to harm us. And we continue on in Proverbs 7 in verses 14 through 16. In Proverbs 7, 14 through 16, "Behold, the wicked brings forth iniquity. Yes, he conceives trouble and brings forth falsehood. He made a pit and dug it out, and has fallen in the ditch which he made. His trouble shall return upon his own head, and his violent dealing shall come down on his own crown." So people that do this deliberately, they will suffer consequences, maybe that we don't see, but you cannot live that lifestyle without something coming back on you. There's a psalm written by David who is asking God to put to shame the people that were making life difficult for him. And if we go through Psalm 35, and it says in my Bible, it's a Psalm of David, and he's asking God to fight against those who fight against me. Take a hold of shield and buckler and stand up for my help. Draw out the spear and stop those who pursue me. And the whole chapter is such that asking God to intervene against those. He said, "Let those be put to shame and brought to dishonor who seek after my life. Let those who turn back and brought to confusion who plot my hurt. Let them be like chaff before the wind, and let the angel of the Lord chase them." In other words, let the consequences of their own sin, find them out and catch them out. So we have to be wary of the stumbling blocks that others put in front of us as individuals. The third point that I want to bring today is the stumbling blocks, becoming aware of the stumbling blocks that we put in front of other people. And sometimes we do this inadvertently, and then we cause a problem for others. The Apostle Paul in Romans 14:13 tells us, "Therefore, let us not judge," meaning condemn, "one another anymore, but rather determine this, not to put an obstacle or stumbling block in a brother's way." Wonder why he told people that. Why did he have to write to the church and say, don't put a stumbling block in other people's way? Well, the verse in Romans here tells us to be careful, that to watch out for one another. We might be doing something that causes a brother in Christ to fall. To follow up on that, Leviticus 19 and verse 14, we have the instruction in Leviticus 19:14, "You shall not curse a deaf man." Well, think about that. Can the deaf man hear you if you curse him out loud? No, he might see your demeanor. He's not going to hear you. But that doesn't reflect well on you. The verse continues, "Nor place a stumbling block before the blind." In other words, they can't see what's coming in front of them. "But you shall revere your God. I am the Lord." Now, putting a stumbling block in front of the blind is really got to be, you know, deliberately doing so is a painful thought. My uncle explained that he got up overnight once to go to the bathroom, and it was dark out. He just had a little glow in the room, and he misjudged the corner of the hearth of the fireplace. And he rammed his foot into it. He was just slightly off and broke his big toe. Well, as an airline pilot, you really can't fly a jumbo jet with a broken toe very well. And he said he tried to explain to the that he was getting up to leave, and to explain that he had damaged his toe. How much more so, and he knew where that was, you know, and through over time, but how much more so if somebody put a stumbling block in front of somebody else who couldn't see it? So God calls us to make good decisions, to learn to become more godlike, and not do those things, certainly not deliberately, or to do it without thinking, without thought of others. Paul again wrote in 1 Corinthians chapter 8 and verse 9 about making good decisions and becoming more godlike. And he writes, "But take care that this liberty of yours," meaning your ability to make decisions, "does not somehow become a stumbling block to the weak." Yeah, we can do a lot of things, but are we doing things that are okay in our mind, but they might be a stumbling block for someone else? You know, even the manner in which we present the truth can be a stumbling block. Paul understood this, again in 1 Corinthians 1 and verse 23. "But we preach Christ crucified, to the Jews a stumbling block." Well, the Jews saw this whole preaching of Christ and the gospel of the kingdom was a stumbling block. They couldn't quite understand it. And he continues in the verse, "And to the Gentiles, foolishness." I didn't see what, you know, that's all just silly business. As one of my wife's professors many years ago, when she explained that she was going to be gone for a week to keep the feast, and so she wanted to make arrangements for her schoolwork, and the professor looked at her and said, "Well, that's silly." Of course, they think that's foolishness. The ways of God are but foolishness. And that's a stumbling block. So then, but God has given us guidance on how to approach that. And this is, you're giving milk where milk is appropriate. In other words, something easy for a baby. You don't feed the baby steak. And then meat or solid food when it's appropriate. The writer of Hebrews in Hebrews 5 and verse 12. "For though by this time you ought to be teachers, you need someone to teach you again the first principles of the oracles of God. And you have become to need milk and not solid food." Some people allowed themselves to become weak. They weren't getting strong truth. He said, you need to start over. You need milk. You need something soft that will bring you up. And then the very next verse in Hebrews 5:13, "For everyone who partakes only of milk is unskilled in the word of righteousness, for he's a babe." And we've all seen babies. That's all they can handle is milk. That's it. And for them, it's pretty important. But after a while, do we find adults? That's all they're doing is drinking milk. They're not going to have the best of health because they don't have a full and complete diet. And it's the same thing with our decisions. As we become more mature Christians, then we become more skilled in the Word. And so to somebody who's new to Christianity, new to the understanding that God is calling him to, again, I would turn to 1 Corinthians, and this time chapter 3 and verse 2. Because what did Paul tell you? I fed you with milk and not with solid food. For until now you were not able to receive it, and even now you are still not able. So he knew the strength and the level of the new congregation that was there and said, I, the reason I'm giving you the milk is you can't take the strong stuff and able to. And so he was working on a plan to build them up, that if he threw a lot of strong truth at them, it would be very difficult. So we have to be careful then with regard to putting stumbling blocks in front of others, that we have to be careful, that even the truth can be a stumbling block. The fourth point I want to go look at today is that becoming aware of stumbling blocks that we as a congregation might put in front of others. We have a church culture that we're generally comfortable with. And over many years, we've established a regularity, a way of doing things. And we look forward to this orderly church services. But you know, and I've spoken recently as well, there are bits and pieces of our church culture that might seem strange or unusual to us. That's not the way they do it over down the street at whatever XYZ church is. And it's a little different to us. So we have to be careful when we have somebody who is new in the faith. And the Bible tells us to identify then potential obstacles so they are able to join us at church. And to this, we look to Isaiah chapter 57 and verse 14. In Isaiah 57, 14, and it will be said, build up, prepare the way, remove every obstacle out of the way of my people. Why would Isaiah write that? Because clearly, not everyone was building up. And Isaiah recognized that there were obstacles in front of the children of Israel. So he's encouraging them to build up, prepare the way, and this, which is what we're all called to do. So we're to build others up, and we're to identify the potential obstacles that may make it possible or difficult for people with whom God is calling. In Revelation 2:14, there's the description or discussion about various churches. And in Revelation 2:14, there's this explanation, I have a few things against you, because you have some who hold to the teaching of Balaam, some who kept teaching Balak, and put a stumbling block before the sons of Israel to eat things sacrificed to idols and commit acts of immorality. Well, there are some things that might be okay to do. And in this case, as the reference is it okay to eat meat that's offered to idols? Well, not if you're worshiping the idol. That would not be. But if you did it in front of other people who would be aghast at that, you would become a stumbling block. So don't be a stumbling block to other people. Even if it's not a sin to yourself, it could become one if you're doing so without regard to others. And then we learn in Matthew 2:7 that the leaders who are called to serve God have a special responsibility. In Malachi 2:7, for the lips of a priest should preserve knowledge, and men should seek instruction from his mouth, for he's the messenger of the Lord of hosts. So there's the expectation that the leaders that God is calling are to preserve God's word, preserve the knowledge, and to be able to preach it. And then, of course, I'm going to turn to the next verse in Matthew 2:8. But you see, we're all called to become kings and priests. So we're all being trained now to become leaders. In Malachi 2:8, for as for you, you have turned aside from the way, you have caused many to stumble by the instruction. Ooh, the leaders are trying to instruct, yet they're causing people to stumble with the instruction. You've corrupted the covenant of Levi, says the Lord of hosts. Well, so we all have to be careful that what we do and how we say it and how we conform to God's words doesn't create a problem for other people. Jesus Christ spoke strongly about putting obstacles or stumbling blocks in front of others. In Matthew 23:13, he was particularly hard on the Pharisees. "But woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, because you shut off the kingdom of heaven from people, for you do not enter in yourselves, nor do you allow those who are entering to go in." They were blocking others for what they themselves were not destined to go in. Luke 11:52. "Woe to you, lawyers, for you've taken away the key of knowledge. You yourselves did not enter, and you hindered those who were entering." In other words, they didn't have full understanding, but they blocked other people who wanted to have a better understanding of the calling of God. And then 1 John 2:10. "We must not hinder those whom God is drawing into his church. Because what should we do?" And 1 John 2:10, "For the one who loves his brother abides in the light, and there's no cause for stumbling in him." So we're called to rise up to show the light that that was spoken of earlier. So in loving our brothers and sisters in the church, that we will recognize, and we might all recognize something different as a congregation, to not put stumbling blocks in front of others. So as this season draws near, the Passover season, we must identify the stumbling blocks that we put in front of ourselves, our own self-improvement. We have to identify the stumbling blocks others might put in front of us so that we might be careful not to be caught unawares. We have to be careful and identify the stumbling blocks that we might put in front of other people, whether knowingly or unknowingly. And then fourthly, the stumbling blocks we must identify that we as a congregation can avoid so that we can welcome others into our fellowship. I don't have any questions for us today, but I do want us to think on these things, that we can encourage one another, and that each of our that every opportunity for fellowship, as we can do from Isaiah, build up, build up, build up.